Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to this 49th episode of Step Into the Light on this Tuesday morning, March 28th. Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Patty Sheen. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through their lives, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. Have you lost a loved one, friend, co-worker, church or organization member? All of us at some point in our lives, and the manner in which we handle it can determine the course of the rest of our lives. Is there a right or wrong way to grieve? What does the Bible teach us about grief? This morning, I am pleased to welcome Ken West. Ken serves as chaplain and interim director at Arkansas Valley Hospice and pastors the Crowley Community Baptist Church in Ordway, Colorado. Ken has extensive education to include a bachelor's and master's in divinity, a bachelor's in pastoral ministry, a chaplaincy certificate in grief counseling, and a doctorate in Christian counseling, which makes him much more educated than I am, for sure. Ken is a U.S. Navy veteran and has served as a pastor and youth minister in Nebraska. He lives in southeastern Colorado with his wife. Welcome this morning, Ken.
Well, thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. You and I have gotten to know each other through the grief support group that we run here in town, and I've just always enjoyed your comments and the discussions that you lead, you and Steve, both of you, and Mark, all three, actually. But I wanted to bring up to listeners that we did have a show with one of the other hospice staff. Actually, it was 4 months ago tomorrow, November 29th, but I wanted to make listeners aware, in case you're listening to both shows, that the focus of this one will be a little different. Last time we talked about the services, both physical, emotional, spiritual aspects that hospice provides. This morning we're going to focus more on ministry and the spiritual facets of grieving and the grief process. So Ken, first of all, tell us where it all began for you. Tell us about your calling to ministry. What made you realize that this was going to be your course in life?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I knew at 8 years of age, when I accepted the Lord Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior, that I was to be a preacher. I did not answer that call until I was in my 30s, but I always knew that ministry was my calling. The ministry has evolved. For me, I started with youth, just as a volunteer youth pastor in Nebraska for about 2 or 3 years, and I still had that inkling to go into full-time ministry. I was at that time, after I got out of the Navy, I was working with my father-in-law on a family hog farm, and things were going well, but then I got involved with the church as a youth minister, but I still felt that calling. And the one thing that was holding me back was that deal called school, because back in high school, my favorite subject was lunch and PE, but since then, my teachers would be surprised. I enjoy studying and everything, so that's kind of my deal about calling into the ministry, that I knew at 8 years old, but it just took a while, I guess a few 2x4s to get my attention to make that move. So,
well, very good. Well, Ken, most pastors have a particular, I don't want to say subject, but area that they like to preach on that's really special to them, that is kind of their passion. So could you tell us in your preaching ministry, what is your passion? What is it that just really kind of sets you on fire and makes you want to get that message out to other people?
Well, great. That's, I'm going to answer that twofold. You know, from the pulpit, my passion is probably the holiness of God and the holiness of the believer. I like to preach on that, and that we're new creatures in Christ, that the old man is dead, and we're dead to the penalty of sin because of Christ. But outside the pulpit, probably my passion is working with those that have suffered a loss in some way, because so many times we think of loss as just a loss of life, but it could be in our culture. Divorce is so prevalent nowadays, so there could be that loss, and there could be a loss of a job or a loss of a pet. So probably outside the pulpit, grief or bereavement would be my passion, but in the pulpit, the holiness and of a believer and who we are in Christ.
Very good. Well, yes, I do know that you, as in your introduction that I had at the beginning of the show here, you obviously have done a lot of study in grief work. And I would say, knowing you, I'm asking you, this is probably your strength in working with individuals.
Yeah, it would be. It would be if I had a ministry outside the pulpit ministry on Sundays. It would be working with those who have suffered a loss. And like I said just a minute ago, their loss is more than just losing a loved one. But that's probably where my passion is for probably those that have lost a loved one. Because, and I know we're going to probably get to that a little bit later, but so many times people aren't allowed to grieve, and they don't allow themselves to grieve either. So that's, I think that's why it's a passion for me, because we've all suffered a loss one way or another.
Exactly. And, you know, also, Ken, we can suffer the loss of a dream.
Yes.
Something that we've always wanted all of our life, and we realize, like me at, you know, my age, you all of a sudden realize that, hey, this just ain't going to be the thing for me, you know, or loss
right.
of a location, a person who has to change jobs and has to move and grieves the loss of that particular location. So yeah, you're right. There are so many facets to loss that we have all experienced at one time or another in our lives. And we've all experienced it in different ways.
Right.
So you serve as a chaplain. I'm sorry.
Nope. I just said, right. You're good.
You serve as the chaplain with Ark Valley Hospice. What responsibilities do your chaplain duties entail, Ken?
Well, the chaplaincy details, it's the responsibilities are, first of all, when we get a new patient, is I go and do an assessment, what they call an assessment, and see where they are, if they want any spiritual support. And if they do, then we look and see what kind of support they want, because they're already starting to pre-grieve. The family, and my responsibility is both to the family and the patient. The family starts to pre-grieve the loss of the loved one, and the person that is on hospice is grieving the fact that their life is no longer normal. So that's probably one of the main duties, is just to bring emotional support and spiritual support why they're still a patient. And then when the patient passes, my details change, as then I am available to the family to help them through this loss, to help them sometimes even make sense, if we can make sense. But we go to scriptures if they allow, just to help them through their loss of their loved one. And that's just a brief synopsis of my duties.
You brought up a good point, Ken. You said, if they allow. In other words,
right.
You do not in any way try to, that's the word, I don't want to say force, but encourage a person. They have to come to you with a request for scripture or for some kind of spiritual guidance.
Yeah, in a way they do. Because we're get some Medicare funds, Medicaid. We are by law have to make an assessment in 2 days of getting a patient on board. And if that's the first question I ask, do they want spiritual support? And I introduce who I am as a chaplain and everything, and tell them what I'm about. And some will say, you know, I'll take the emotional support, but not the spiritual support. And I've found once you get into their life, even if they didn't want the spiritual support at first, a lot of times they'll come around as they start to decline or see a need for their family. They'll want spiritual support. But we never, I can't think of the right word either, but we never force the spiritual support. It's there and it's offered. And a lot of times they'll lead into
okay.
it because they see the decline in their life.
It's never a criterion for care, I guess we can say. That, you
right.
know, if you don't accept the spiritual support, oh well. So, yeah, I understand
right.
where you're coming from. I certainly understand that, Ken. Thank you for clarifying that.
You bet.
So, Ken, let's talk about how do we approach someone who is grieving. It's a very difficult time, not only for the people who are grieving, but for friends and relatives who are trying to be supportive, and they just don't know what to say. They don't know whether to bring up the subject. Is it something that they should not talk about? And even if you have a situation, not necessarily a hospice situation, but say an auto accident where a person loses a loved one and everybody knows it's happened and you go to the funeral and you just sometimes find yourself not knowing what to say and how to approach this elephant in the room. So share with us on that.
Well, that is a great question, and I like to say there's not really a wrong way to helping somebody, but there can be some bad things that can bad things to say. So I've got a list of things that I want to just read out in a little bit. But the first thing you got to do when you approach somebody, if you know them, it makes it easier. But you want to make them relaxed. You meet them on their terms. One of the things that I love about reading scriptures, Jesus met the folks on their terms. He met the woman at the well. And different stories that we can go on. And you got to let them know. One of the things that I was taught, and I think it's so important when you're doing any kind of grief and bereavement counseling, is it's not what you know, it's how much you care. And that's what they want to know. They want to know that you really care. And the first thing I tell people is, if you ask how somebody's doing, that's in a lost situation, do not ask it if you're not willing to sit and listen to them for an hour, hour and a half, or whatever, because they may unload on you. So the first mm-hmm. thing to answer that question is, how do you approach it? You approach it as a friend. You approach it in prayer. First thing that I like to do is prayer. And it did happen. Sometimes you could approach it to the fact of, hey, I knew your mom. I remember watching football with your mom. And they'll light up. They'll light up the stories like that. You know, if you don't know what to say and the loss is fresh, a hug is great. Or I'm just so sorry. Don't try to fix it. It's not in our position to fix. We're there just to listen to them. And that's the one thing, if I could inform anybody, is be ready to listen. We don't always have to have things to say. But let me just give you some things to say. And this could be anything of a loss of life, a hospital stay, or whatever. Don't say, I know just how you feel. That's the wrong thing to say, because you don't. Even though you might have taken a loss yourself, you don't know how they feel. We each grieve differently. So avoid the deal of, I understand what you're going through, or I know just how you feel, because you don't. You don't know how you feel. I'm going to read a couple more, then I'm going to stop for a moment and give you a chance to ask me a question or something to maybe go over a little bit more. But I'm just going to read a couple more here. If somebody lost a child, if somebody, young couple, lost a child, don't say you can have more children. But people say that. So mm-hmm. no one could ever take that child's place. And don't say God needed him more than you. And you hear that when somebody loses somebody, or maybe somebody's a good singer. They'll say, well, God needed somebody in his choir and everything. That's not going to help the loss. It's actually because that person's going to say, well, I needed them too. And it's going to cause maybe a little bit more hurt. So let me just go with three more here. Avoid attempts to make that person feel good. Don't say count your blessings. I know we've heard that say. It's better to say we'll just use an example of a job. I know this job was important to you, and you will feel worried about the future. That would be better to say than say count your blessings. Don't say this is a blessing in disguise. We hear that. I said it myself and everything, and it's really not a good thing to say to somebody that has lost. It's better just to say, hey, I'm sorry. I'm sorry this is happening to you, but know that I'm there. I'll walk with you through this. And again, if I can reiterate, just to be there and listen, because God gave us two sets of eyes and two ears to listen with, and we can see how they're doing by listening with our ears and listening with our eyes. And let me go one more time, then I'll take a breath here. Sometimes as a preacher, I get accused of not taking a breath, so I will take a breath here in just a moment. Don't say there are a lot of people worse off than you. You know what? That there may be people worse off than you, but you don't say that. You don't verbalize it because you're trying to make them feel better. And we're going to go over in a little bit some more stuff. You can ask me some questions, what to say, and we could go from there. But I'm going to take a breath now.
All righty, Ken. Well, you brought up some excellent points, and it brings to mind, I attend a Christian Writers Conference up here in Estes Park I've been going to that for several years now, on and off. And one of the courses that was offered up there was one that I'll always remember. It was called No Pat Answers. And
right.
We talked about that in our, well, supposedly we're supposed to be writers. Most of them are. I'm not quite there yet as far as having a novel out or anything. But we talked about that at length, about how with your characters, you don't come back with those pat answers in a lost situation, because you don't want to do that in real life. And just like
right.
you said, the one, well, we're not supposed to share anything that happened in that, but we talked about different experiences that we had that were just very, very hurtful. A person
right.
thinks that they're being so helpful. And what, just like you said with the child, when they say, oh, she's in a better place, or, well,
right.
you can have another son. I mean, it's just absolutely devastating to a parent who has lost a child. By the same token, it's devastating to a person who loses a job that they've had for 25 years and is told, but, oh, aren't you lucky that you have some savings? You know, that's not what you're thinking about at the time. You're thinking about
right.
that loss and how it has totally sent you off of the rails as far as your life plan. So yeah, we can tend to be very insensitive toward each other sometimes without even realizing it.
Right,
loss of a
right.
pet is another huge one. My sister just lost her adorable little dog that she had for years, and I know she's still grieving that. And shoot, I lost one of our huskies here a year and a half ago, and I still
right.
I have another one, and when I pet him, I still say, I know you miss Aspen like I do. And then, of course, as you know, I lost my mom and my husband within a short period of time. And I must say, people have been very, very understanding for me, and I've been blessed that way. Even on Sunday morning, I was just kind of feeling a little bit bummed. I just happened to glance at my husband's picture on the way out the door to church, and I thought, oh,
right.
you know, so used to us going to church together here. It's been 9 months, but after I got to church, we had a meeting after, and a very dear friend of mine picked up on my mood, because she called me later in the afternoon, and she said, you just kind of seemed a little reserved and kind of sad in that meeting. And it's like, wow, yeah, you picked up on that. I was just kind of having a bum moment there, you know. So we do. You're absolutely right. God gave us, what is it they say? God gave us two eyes, he gave us two ears, and he gave us one mouth. So sometimes we need to just shut up and listen and watch and pay
right.
attention to
exactly.
what we need to be taking in. So, yes, those points that you made, Ken, were excellent, and thank you for that.
Well, thank you. There's so many answers to that question. You know, how do we approach someone who is grieving? And do we ignore it? We don't ignore it. Some of the things to expect on both sides. If you're the grieving person, some people will stay away from you because you're easy to cry and they think that they upset you and they didn't know what to say. And on the other hand is, if you know somebody's grieving, don't leave them. Go and just talk to them. Ask them some questions. You know, one of the things you ask, how do we approach someone who is grieving? Sometimes I've been with couples that are with the wife or the husband after 60, 70 years of marriage. I'll ask them how they met their spouse and have them start telling some stories, just some quick things. And pretty soon they'll be laughing. They'll be sharing more stories. And don't be afraid of the silence. But don't be afraid
mm-hmm.
of the tears, because I always believe that tears is the best way to get it out. And telling the stories, you know, be careful that we're not there to fix it. They'll fix it on their own. They'll fix it on their own, because pretty soon they'll start talking more and going out more. Now, you can encourage a person if you're a good friend with somebody and they had the tendency to want to stay inside instead of getting out. If they were a church goer, you can invite them to church. You can invite them to go to dinner. Get them out, but don't tell them that, hey, you're hurting yourself staying inside. They'll come out eventually, but if you can make that step of saying, hey, let's go to the ball game together. But I know you enjoy the ball game. Let's go to the ball game. Let's go here together. They'll soon get out, and pretty soon they'll start having a good time. And the one thing I want to say, everybody grieves differently. And you said it, there's no pat answers. So we have to be careful. What worked for one person may not work for another. If I could just really highlight this, the best thing in grief is just being there and listening. to the folks.
Yes. And something I wanted to bring up too, Ken, to our listeners, that this just meant so much to me when my husband passed. There's a lady in my town who graduated with my husband, and she is on an email group that organizes the high school reunion every year. And, of course, now you're looking at, you know, 50-some years down the road since they graduated. But she, on that email group, she sent out word that my husband had passed. And I'm telling you what, Ken, there were people that sent me emails that I had never even met that grew up with him. And some of the things they shared with me were just priceless, things that I didn't know about how he was so involved in different sports activities and things like this that he didn't talk about a whole lot. And things that they noticed about his personality, how his work ethic was just impeccable, and he was always on top of politics and loved to read his newspaper, and just things like this that just resonated with me. And those emails are just something that I've saved them in a file, and I will just always have them to refer back to, and that meant a lot. So I know I'm not always real good about sending out sympathy cards, but still, a sympathy card, an email, a phone call can mean so much to a person. And if you put some of your personal relationship with that person into it, it makes it, I think it helps round out that person's personality for the person who is grieving. Do you hear what I'm saying with that?
Oh, I do. And I totally recommend it. That's the thing that, excuse me, I was going to get to a little bit later, was with our modern technology, we could do an email, a text. We go back to the old way of a letter, a phone call, just to see how they're doing, you know. And if it's an old classmate that they haven't seen for a long time, they may put down, well, I remember when Johnny used to glide down that field, and it'll bring a smile on your face. Always keep, if you send something to somebody, always keep the positive. Never negative. Never anything negative. Always positive. And that person that has suffered that loss will really, really enjoy that, because that's just a big part of the healing process, is to hear something about their loved one in a positive form. They want to hear that. So I totally agree with you.
Exactly. Ken, usually about this time during the show, I just kind of take a little break. It's not really a break, but I just need to make listeners aware. On Blog Talk Radio, sometimes we have listeners that come into a show after it has started, and they're not sure what they're listening to, who they're listening to, what the show is about. Excuse me. So just let me recap real quick that, listeners, you are listening this morning to Step Into the Light with your host, Patty Sheen. My guest this morning is Ken West. Ken is the interim director and chaplain at the Arkansas Valley Hospice here in La Junta in southeastern Colorado. He is also the pastor of Crowley Community Baptist Church in Ordway, Colorado, which is also out here on the Eastern Plains. We have been discussing grief, the different aspects of grief, the ways that people grieve, the things that we can do to help other people grieve. And if you have missed a part of the show and you would like to hear it in its entirety, or you'd like to listen to it again or refer it to friends or whatever, you will find the listing on my website, which is Patty Sheen, PattiSheene.com. You'll find this particular show right on that very first page. You'll also find it under the Blog Talk Radio tab. There is a page that's called Step Into the Light Show of the Week, which, of course, this show will be up all week. And then there's an archive page that will give you a link to all of our shows. So I encourage listeners to please be sure and listen to that. Also, if you're wondering a little bit more about hospice itself, what kind of services they offer, how a person can enlist those services and such as that, I refer you to our November 29th show, when we had another staff member from hospice, Mark Fisher, on, and he talked more about that, about what services are offered and financial issues and those kind of things. Actually, we ran that show right before the holidays, so we also talked about how to handle grief during the Christmas holiday and that kind of thing. So just let me refer you back to that show as well, and any of the other shows that we have available for listeners. So now we'll get back to Ken here. Ken, children can have a particularly difficult time with death. And I remember one of the comments you made brought this memory back to me, that when my grandmother passed away, my daughter was young. She was like probably only 4 or 5 years old. And when I had to tell her that Grammy had passed away, I remember, of course, she burst into tears. And I probably said the wrong thing, because I said, well, she's with Jesus now. And she says, but Mommy, I don't want her to be with Jesus. I want her to be with us. And that's a typical response. Ken, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
I thought I lost you.
No, you kind of got a little quiet there, but no, I'm here.
Good, good. Here. Did you hear what I said?
I did.
Good. Okay.
That's a tough question. Children can. And one of the things we tend to do, again, with children is we tend to want to sugarcoat it. An incident, I don't know if this would make any sense, but it was real. It's real to me, and I like to sometimes avoid telling stories about myself. But I lost my mother in 2012, and then my mother-in-law in July of 2013, and my father-in-law in December of 2013. So my wife and I lost three of our parents really, really quick.
Boy, I'll say he sure did.
Everything. And then my little grandson, he was probably about 2 or 3 years old. He asked the question, when is Grandpa West going to die? A good question, really, from this young kid, because, mm-hmm. His mom was mortified, because here I am, that's my dad and everything.
Sure.
And I think that was a good question, because in his mind, okay, if Grandma West died, Grandma and Grandpa Plattner, what about Grandpa West? And a lot of times we want to just push it off to the side. And we do need to explain to him that all of us, sometime or another, will die. And if we know Jesus, we'll go to heaven with Jesus and everything. But we don't sugarcoat it. We don't treat them like they don't have the ability to know. We just need to sit down. Sometimes the best thing to be able to sit down and talk to a child when they're experiencing that hard time is if they're playing with the truck, get on the floor. Talk to them while they're playing on the truck, because maybe you can use something as a real-life example. I remember doing a funeral service, and a young kid, probably about 8 years old, was talking about what his grandmother talked about. His grandma or grandpa was she took an orange, and that outer, when he died, that outer shell of an orange is just the outer part of the body, and it's gone. Yes, it's gone from us, but this inner part, which is a sweetness, is now with Jesus. And I really like that illustration. And again, don't sugarcoat it, because they're grieving. Don't think just because they're young, they don't grieve the loss. One of the things that I would say, because you didn't ask it, be careful what you say if you have a parent, a grandparent, and you have young kids. Because I've seen this or heard this said, is where the little boy comes in and grandpa picks him up and grandpa's smiling, feeling good to have his grandchild there. And somebody says, well, you are such good medicine to this little kid for your grandpa. Meant well, really good meaning and everything. But then when that grandpa dies, that little boy is shocked, because he thought he was medicine making his grandpa feel better. Be careful with what you say. But know that they have a hard time with death too, even little kids. So I've seen it where they're toddlers, or they're in their 3 and 4 year old, they lose grandma or grandpa. Sometimes they'll come back and forth to the room. Talk to them, and they'll sometimes tell you how they're feeling. But again, listen to them. It's a little different than an adult. You don't really say a whole lot. You can't explain the death process. But again, just listen to them and just to guide them to where grandma and grandpa, now because of their faith in Christ, and that their body was tired and needed rest with Jesus. And the answer to, it's a tough one, the answer of, well, I didn't want him to be with Jesus. And he could, well, we just all get tired. It was a time for rest. But guide them. don't push it to the back burner. I hope that explains a little bit.
Yes, it sure does, Ken. And I love the analogy that you used about the orange that you shared with us. I think that's great.
Well, thank you.
And sadly, in this country, we have a lot of young people, young teens, preteens, who are dealing with the loss of their classmates through suicide.
Yes.
And this is really a hard one. I know in our school, we had a suicide here not too long ago. We're in this little tiny town here in southeastern Colorado. And even
right.
though my granddaughter did not necessarily have a close friendship relationship with this young man, still, it affected her. It affects
right.
our kids. Could you speak to that a little bit, Ken, and how we can help with that? Because suicide is such a tough issue to deal with anyway.
It is. It's a really, really tough issue. And I'll speak to that, because suicide, even though you may not know the person personally, it affects. It affects the community. The smaller the community, the more it affects, because you're family. You're family. So one of the things that I like to try to do is if I know somebody that's committed a suicide, took their life, and I've had the opportunity to talk to people, is kind of get away of don't answer or don't try to answer the whys or the what ifs, because it's going to drive you crazy. But talk to them about the person. One of the questions that a lot of people will have in them will be, what about, or can they go to heaven because they quote the Ten Commandments of thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not murder, and everything. And their biggest hang-up is that they killed themselves before they had a chance to ask for forgiveness. Well, if that was the case, none of us would get to go to heaven, because there's probably, or very few of us, because we probably have done a sin that we didn't ask for forgiveness. It's God's grace that saves us. And I'm not trying to get really theology here, but that's probably the number one question that they ask. And you could guide it through the scriptures that, yes, it's a sin and it's wrong if they ask that. Again, be honest with them. Try to answer your questions. Ask them, it does not keep them out of – now, I know there would be some arguments and disagreements with that, but in my mm-hmm. belief that all sins, past, present, and future, when you accept Christ, have been forgiven and everything.
Right.
So let's go on to the next thing, because I know that's a touchy spot, but that's one of the questions I'll ask. So guide it with scripture and everything, and in prayer. And if you don't know the answer with that, send them to a clergy person or whatever. But again, the death happened. And then the biggest question is the why, or why would somebody do this? Why would somebody that had it all, why would somebody that was the prom queen, the star quarterback on the football team? I like to use this story. I mentioned earlier that I was working on a family hog farm, and our farm, or one of our finishing units, was 50 miles away from our house. I used to tell my kids when they were younger that I could drive and take a nap while I was driving, because I knew this area so well, or I could drive I knew the directions. But one day it was so foggy. And you know how fog is. Fog socks in, and all of a sudden it lifts. And when it lifted, I was 7 miles from my exit. I couldn't see the way off the interstate. Well, in life sometimes it gets so foggy and so hard, we don't see a way out. And that person that is hurting, their only way out is to get themselves out. They think is get themselves out of the pain by taking their life. And when I use that illustration, for some, it helps them understand the why could somebody do this. Because sometimes we don't know what a person is going through. But again, mm-hmm. help them through it. It happened. And then you can even point out the why you don't want to take in time, why you don't want to take your life, because of the hurt that it has. It's probably one of the hardest deaths for a family to get over, because they ask so many questions of what did I miss? What could have
yes.
I done differently and stuff? And you try to address that. And sometimes there's nothing, and a lot of times there's nothing we could have done. They were just in such a fog, they see no other way out. They didn't realize the long-term effect it would have on a family. They were just thinking of getting out of the pain themselves.
Exactly. Yeah, unfortunately, I have experienced, not in my family praise God for that, but I experienced the suicide of a very dear friend, and this has been several years back, but what was so hard for me was that I thought she was really getting her life back together and coming out of all of the hurt that she had experienced. Her husband had passed away 3 years previous, and she committed suicide on the third anniversary of his death. And here she was in a new relationship, and she had had issues with alcohol use, and she was well on the road to recovery with all that. And I just felt like, wow, you know, she's going to be okay. And boy, when I got that phone call, I was just absolutely shocked.
Yeah.
So it's a very difficult thing to deal with, for sure.
It is, and the gurus and the experts say that on deaths, we'll talk the loss of deaths. If it's a terminal illness death, it will take a shorter amount of time, maybe a year. If it was a tragic death, say a car accident or accident at home, an unexpected death, it could take up to 3 years, a year to 3 years. But a suicide, usually very seldom do you totally recover from that grief. It's just because there'll be reminders. There'll be something, and it's a different death because they took their own life. So there's always that questions of, why didn't they reach out? Why didn't they ask for whatever and stuff? And it's impacting. And if I could tell anybody listening here, is if your life is a mess, if you feel like you're spiraling downward, contact a suicide hotline, contact a preacher, and talk about it, because the after effect that you leave if you decide to take your life is tremendous. And if you've been talking to your radio audience, if you've been through where somebody that you know is taking their life and you know that feeling, please seek help so you don't leave your family and friends the same way you felt.
Yeah, and if you do encounter someone who makes a comment and you think they're just joking, don't ever take it as a joke. And always find out if that person actually has a plan, and if that plan could be executed. Like if a person says, well, I'm going to shoot myself. Well, do you have a gun? Well, no, there's no guns in my house, and I wouldn't know how to handle one anyway. Or, you know, I wouldn't even know how to fire it. But if the person says, yeah, I'm going to get in my car and drive off the end of the cliff down there at the lake, then, you know, and that's a feasible plan, then, yeah. Mm-hmm. So you have to assess all that.
Right. Take it all serious. Even, like you said, if they just make a passing joke on that, just take it serious. By law, as a clergy, member of the clergy, and even as a chaplain, if somebody threatens their life, I have to, especially anybody under 18 years of age, I have to turn that into the proper authorities and stuff.
Sure.
Even if I think they're joking. I'd rather err on the side of grace. I'd rather have them mad at me than, excuse me, have them take their lives.
Exactly, and end up with a tragedy. Well, Ken, the premise of this show is, as I said at the beginning, I bring guests on who have either been in a dark place and found their way back to light, or who, like you, bring others back to light through their ministry, their writing, their other creative venues, whatever. I'd like to ask you, in the course of maybe during your education, during getting your pastorship going, maybe working with hospice, was there ever a time when you just felt like you were really in the dark and had a hard time finding your way back to light, and how did you get there?
Well, that's a great question. I know for sake of time, I'll give you the short version. I said earlier I was saved when I was 8, and there was a time in my life that I just was tired of being that do-gooder Christian, and I wandered a little bit. I wandered in the wilderness. I really didn't want much to do with church because of it was full of hypocrites, but it didn't keep me from going to McDonald's or to Walmart's or stuff. But it was a dark time in my life. We had a few kids at that time. Things weren't as good as they should have been in the marriage and everything. And Promise Keepers back in the men's ministry was just getting started back in the 90s. And had a friend of mine from the Navy come out, and he was working with some other friends. And he gave me a tape because he had to go to this Promise Keepers deal. And I kept listening to the music. And my life was, to the world standards, it was good. But inside I was hurting because I wasn't falling like I should. And I literally came out of a out of a hog pen, and gave my life totally, fully to Christ, and I would do whatever he wanted me to do, and that's when I got back into the ministry and everything. But that's a quick deal, the quick side of it. But it was a dark time. It was a dark time, and came back into the light of Jesus Christ. Our marriage is great. Couldn't be any better because of the fact that Christ is ahead of our marriage and ahead of our household. So that is just one time. But there's been many times that probably dark times, but Christ has always brought me out of them.
Oh, very good. Yes, and I noticed in the information that you sent me that you have 4 children. Is that correct?
Maybe I forgot to put the last one on there. I have 5
children. Oh, well, maybe I didn't read it right either, Ken. Don't mind me.
Well, I could have made a mistake, too, but I just hope I didn't leave one off and don't tell me which one I left off in case you're listening.
I doubt you did that.
I have 5 children and 5 grandchildren, so.
Yes, you do have 5. I can't count. That's my problem. But what I noticed that you have 2 children that are around my 2's age. Your oldest 2 are about my 2's age, which tells me that you I got started a little late.
And I got started early. I was 18 when I got married.
Okay, well, I got married at 26 and had my first one at 30. My husband was already 40 when we had our first child. So.
Okay. I was 18, and somebody's trying to do the math there. I was 18, and I was almost 21 when our first child was born. So.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, but I bet it's been rewarding raising 5 kids, huh?
It has been, and they're, 2 of them are really – really into my 2 youngest boys are really into the ministry. They do camp ministry, and all my kids still go to church and are involved in it. So it's really been a blessing to see them evolve. And I think that's, you ask about the dark side, that for me, my oldest son didn't want to go to church because dad didn't go and it was good enough for him. And I realized I need to be an example for the kids. So it's been a blessing since I got involved with the church and really evolved, and that they have all latched on to a relationship with Christ themselves.
Yes, yes, that is always a blessing and a reward. Well, Ken, I happened to be attending a webinar thing over the computer the other day, and a person made a comment. We were talking about memoir writing, and it was one of those webinars where you could send in questions. And this person made the comment that she didn't agree with the more common teachings on grief, that there are so many biblical truths that are ignored in teachings on grief. I thought that was very interesting, and it just dovetailed perfectly with our discussion this morning, so I thought I'd throw that out there. What are your feelings about what the Bible does teach us on grief and how we should handle it?
Well, that's a good question. The secular world teaches that grief will always be with you, and I disagree with that, because God is the God of comfort and God is the God of healing. And we as Christians, the Bible tells us we should mourn differently than others. The outside world mourns. We know Jesus wept for Lazarus, but he didn't stay in this dark area. He moved on. The Bible teaches us that we are to carry each other's burdens, and we are also the have the gift of being comforters like God is. So I really believe the Bible tells us that we do grieve, but we move on with the race that he has marked for us, that we're not going to be stuck in it. A lot of people like to use the frame once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic, and some people don't agree with that. I believe God could heal us from anything, and he could heal us, and the Bible to me gives us a direction. If we focus our eyes on him, we'll always maybe miss that person to a point, but it isn't devastating to our life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, one of our members of our group the other day, remember when we got into a discussion, talked about how when it comes right down to it, Christ is supposed to be our first love.
Right, right.
He's supposed to be the one that we are most dedicated to above family, above children. And that's tough. That's tough because, you know, we live in the here and now with our loved ones. But I thought that was a very good point that was brought up during that discussion the other day.
And that when we put that focus, that to love our God with all of our heart, mind, and soul, when we do that, we will get over grief differently than the outside world. The problem with mm-hmm. those that don't know Christ, they have no hope. We have
yes.
hope in the future events. Hope in the biblical sense is something in the future. So if our loved one knew Christ, and we knew they knew Christ, we have that hope that we will see them again in one form or another. And we can know that we'll see them because of the Mount of Transfiguration, where the disciples seen Moses and Elijah, and they did not have Kodak at that time to know what they looked like for pictures. So we know we will see our loved ones, but how? That's up for debate. But that's our hope. That's our hope that we have. But for those outside of the light, outside of Christ, they don't have hope, and that's why they go to the different seminars and they try to grasp on the things that just help them comfort. But if we give our burdens, if we give everything to Christ, He will get us through this time. It'll be a new kind of normal and stuff.
Yes, exactly. Ken, you had mentioned to me at one point that you offer training for others on how to deal with those who are grieving. Can you speak a little bit about that?
I do. I offer the training. I like to go into, because I'm a pastor, I don't get the opportunity to go into churches like I'd like to, but I've had the opportunity to go into a couple prisons here in our area of southeast Colorado. And,
oh, that's great.
I go into nursing homes, and I try to teach both of how to deal with yourself that is grieving or with others that are grieving. Again, I go over some of the things I said earlier, what to say, what not to say, and to expect. Of the one thing, there's about four common phases that a person will go into. And, it's shock, denial, numbness, and disbelief would be the first emotional outburst. And the shock and denial is a good thing because it's kind of like God's anesthesia for us, because when we're in shock, we actually don't hurt as bad as we do once we start to find out what really happened. And the other thing, you might have some emotional outbursts. You have some third thing would be some fear, searching, panic, and guilt. Guilt always comes with loss, and that could be a whole nother show someday, is just on guilt alone. But then the fourth thing is loneliness, isolation, depression. Not everybody goes through this, and that's why I like the training. I like to train people in our churches, the church I serve, of what to say, what not to say, what to even expect if you're going through loss. So I do offer training.
Good. That sounds wonderful. Ken, we're about at the end of our time, but you still have time to offer anything else that you would like to share with our listeners, if there's anything that you wanted to say that we didn't cover.
Boy, we covered a lot. We covered a
yes,
lot.
We did.
I guess
yes,
with
we did.
You know, stepping into the light, kind of your step into the light is your theme and everything. And if I could tell anybody a lesson, or if you just kind of ducked in here to lesson, if you don't have the light, if you don't have the light of Christ, He's the one that will guide you through anything. He will guide you through your hardest times. One of the stories that I love to tell out of the Bible, and because when we're grieving, we sometimes just concentrate on our own loss. So I'll take a couple minutes, if I can, just to share this story out of the Bible. It's the disciples are in the boat, and Peter sees Christ walking across the water. And he says, that's you, Lord, bid me to come. And Jesus said, come. And Peter jumped out of the boat. It's easy for us sometimes to jump out of the boat. And Peter's walking across the water. And on the sea is a storm. And there's the waves crashing against the boat and probably crashing against Peter. There's the winds, the thunder, the lightning. And Peter takes his eyes off of Jesus for a moment. That's what happens sometimes in a storm. We take our light and it becomes dark for us. Peter took his eyes off of Jesus and he started to sink. And then he said, Lord, save me. And Jesus is such a gentleman. He was not going to pluck Peter out until Peter asked. And Jesus saves him. And my point of this story is, in the midst of the storm, in the midst of grief, in the midst of loss, continue to focus your eyes on Jesus, that light, and that light will get you through the storm, because he tells us in Hebrews, he'll never leave us and never forsake us. It's us that leaves him in the midst of a storm, and we need him most during the time of loss and grief, because he's the only one that could truly bring us back to peace.
Absolutely. I love that you bring up that particular story, Ken, and it's kind of ironic that you do, because right now at our church, we're doing a women's Bible study, and the name of the book is, if I had to keep the title correctly, If You Want to Walk on Water, You've Got to Get Out of the Boat.
Right.
It centers, is by John Ortberg. I should cite the name of the author. And it talks about that very thing. And in fact, the chapter that we're going to be discussing tomorrow is the one where Jesus says, come, you know, and I can really identify with the whole boat thing, because I grew up on the East Coast. So I spent some time on boats, and that feeling. Now I'm kind of weird in that the rougher the water, the more I loved it.
Right.
The same thing with small planes. You know, I'd rather be in a small plane where you feel every little move than in a big one. But anyway, yeah. So I just really like the fact that you brought up that story, because it's been on my heart lately, because we've been discussing it in our group. So, well, Ken, I can't thank you for a wonderful show. You gave us some very insightful and informative information about this subject of grief, which is always a difficult subject to talk about. But you really gave us some, so you shed light on a dark subject, let's put it that way. So thank you so much for being here this morning, and I hope to see you in the future. I'm hoping that I will soon, and may God bless you.
And God bless you, and thank you for having me on the show.
You bet.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Listeners, goodbye. Listeners, in closing, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. God bless you. We'll see you back here next week, Tuesday, which will be the 4th of April at 8 a.m. Mountain Daylight Time.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a